Over the years, lots of words and phrases have generated lots of fights, verbal or otherwise. If, however, we were somehow able to calculate the ratio of words to disagreements, one sentence might just stand out from the pack. And no, it doesn't involve anyone's virility, hygiene, or parentage. I'm referring to these 27 seemingly simple but constantly debated words. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Sound familiar? It should, because it's the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and 227 years after its adoption, its intended meaning continues to spark fierce rhetorical shootouts in classrooms, courtrooms, and the corridors of government across the United States and right here in Indiana. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and we'll examine on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers some of the gun measures triggering debate in this year's legislative session. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
What if a robotic arm could help disabled students reach for their dreams? It does. Introducing RoboDesk. To learn more about this and more than 400 other world-changing Purdue technologies, visit otc-prf.org.
Last March, in the wake of the nationwide March for Our Lives demonstration, retired U.S. Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens cut to the chase by urging anti-gun activists to seek an outright repeal of the Second Amendment. President Trump responded with a tweet insisting that the amendment would never go away. Now, that exchange pretty much delineates the ongoing war over gun rights. These days, though, the real battles are being fought in state houses across the country, including Indiana's. Most of these legislative skirmishes deal not with the validity of the Second Amendment per se, but rather with ancillary matters such as permit fees, background checks, waiting periods, gun-free zones, and safe storage requirements. Joining me to talk about the issue are Democratic Representative Ed Delaney of Indianapolis, Republican Representative Jim Lucas of Seymour, Democratic Representative Kerry Hamilton of Indianapolis, and Guy Relford, a firearms instructor, the host of a weekly radio program called The Gun Guy, and an attorney whose practice is devoted exclusively to firearms-related legal issues, including the use of deadly force in self-defense. That was not a commercial, but we might hit you up for a contribution for public broadcasting later. Thank you all for being here. I'm probably not going to have to do much today, but sit back and listen to the conversation. Representative Lucas, let's start with you. If you had the magic wand, any caliber, and you could wave it, what would be the perfect legal climate or regulatory scheme in the state of Indiana as it relates to firearms?
Respect the Constitution.
Which means no regulation.
No regulation, but there has to be accountability. With rights come responsibility.
How do you do both?
Well, you recognize people's rights, but you hold them accountable for their actions. And that's one thing we're not really seeing a whole lot of with the courts pleading down or dismissing these gun crimes, because it's not uncommon to see people that are arrested, you know, for violent felons or deadly force actions that have multiple felony convictions, you know, on their record.
So you're clearly an advocate of what has been generally called constitutional carry.
Absolutely.
That no restriction, no gun registry, no permitting fees. But it sounds as if no preemptive measures, but if somebody does something, as you say, stupid
Absolutely.
With it, then you throw the book out.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to take the same wand and I'm going to hand it to you, Ed Delaney. What's your perfect nirvana as it relates to weapons safety?
My nirvana would go back to about 1955 or 60, where we had reasonable gun regulation, where everybody understood it and accepted it. We understood that different communities needed different rules, and there was no constitutional crisis about it, and we all kind of got along. So I'd kind of go back there, but I'd deal with today's technology and try to, you know, do things about gun safety, gun security, background checks of that sort, things that couldn't have been done in the 50s, but basically I'd restore that kind
of 50s,
climate.
When you say that was the perfect, that was basically, even the NRA, correct me if I'm wrong, was that was a sportsman
The focus
club.
Was
generally
yes.
for hunting and,
right.
and so forth. Is that right. yeah. that's what you want to see, guns for hunting? But
no, but we had city regulations, state regulations. Everybody accepted that and understood that. People weren't running around saying the world's on fire because I got to pay a fee to have a gun or because I can't carry an automatic weapon down the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York. People understood that you couldn't do those things. It was a common understanding. And then suddenly we got these theorists on the Supreme Court and theorists in the General Assembly who said, oh, my God, you're ruining the world.
So let me get this straight. Representative Lucas wants to dial back the clock to 1791. You want to go back to the 1950s. Guy Relford, Where do you want to go?
I've got a real simple litmus test on any proposed regulation. I look at it and I say, is this truly and reasonably calculated to keep guns out of the hands of people who should not have guns? Or is the burden going to fall predominantly on law-abiding citizens? And if the burden's going to fall on law-abiding citizens, it's a bad law. If it's actually reasonably calculated to keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have guns, dangerous criminals, dangerously crazy people, or unsupervised children, then I will certainly consider it.
How do you know, though, if they're dangerously crazy, if there is a screening or some sort of background check prior? Or are you supportive of
that? He supports background checks based on that logic.
So you're
okay? Yeah, right.
I mean, I am curious. I'm not trying to trap you. You're saying you want to keep them away from crazy people, but does that require a waiting period so that people can be vetted or that there can be a background check?
That's going to fall predominantly on law-abiding citizens. So where we have an imminent threat, and that's exactly, for instance, how the law in Indiana works today. If someone is an imminent threat to themselves or others, say, for instance, the Parkland shooter, whose name I don't use, he made threats on social media. The police have been called to his foster parents' home dozens of times. He was an established threat. Should there be a vehicle to take guns away from him? Sure.
So you would advocate the so-called red flagging provisions. And we've seen that's pending, I believe, in this session as well, whereby if somebody is seen by, reported by parents or guardians to be a threat to himself or herself or others, I guess it's always male, statistically speaking, so I won't worry about pronouns here. If he's a threat to others, there can be immediate action
taken.
If they're
truly an imminent threat, we recognize a need to remove guns from that person's possession.
So I guess I'm hung up on, though, how do you know that? And don't worry, Representative Hamm, we'll get you in here. But how do you know if you don't do a background check if somebody's seriously crazy or not?
Due process.
Well, first of all, there is a background check on any purchase from a gun dealer.
But not a private.
Why not everybody? Why just gun dealers?
Because we know criminals don't buy their guns.
Now, I'm not worried about the criminal. What about the legitimate citizen who wants to buy a gun? What's the problem with his going through a check, just in case he'd been in a mental institution or something in the past?
If they've been in a mental institution, again, they're a prohibited possessor. It's already against the law for them to possess
a gun. We're trying to deal with a guy who doesn't care about the law.
You've been patient. I will ask the same question in fairness to you. What do you want to see? What's nirvana as it relates to the regulation of firearms?
Thank you, John. And in light of your introductory remarks, I just want to clarify. I'm not here to say we should not have a Second Amendment. I am a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. It's the definition.
I never said that.
I want to make that clear to your viewers.
Unless you and John Paul Stevens are the same. Never seen you both in the same room.
No.
But I presume you're not the same person.
Yes, but I thought it was important to clarify that. You know, it sounds like I'm interested because what I've proposed that I hear in my community people want is closing the loopholes for background checks. I don't know what I heard in your remarks that really was opposed to that.
Universal background checks, that's going to be a burden that's always going to be disproportionately on law-abiding citizens. They don't keep criminals from having guns. They don't keep crazy people from having guns. They just simply don't. California has the nirvana of gun control, including universal background checks, including an assault weapons ban. And we just saw a study come out of UC Davis with the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Policy that said over 10 years of having a complete wish list of gun control, including universal background checks, it had no effect on actual crime. We know they have no effect on actual crime. We know they have no effect on keeping guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have guns. It's a burden that falls exclusively on law-abiding citizens.
Hold on. Guy, I go to the state fair to the gun show.
Right?
To the gun show, right? Mm-hmm. And if there's a licensed firearm seller there, everybody has to have a check. Another guy standing right next to him is buying it in the aisle from some guy.
The Department of Justice has a study that shows less than 1%
of criminals get
their guns from the gun
show. So the burden is if I go to the guy who sells a lot of guns and has a license, I have to be a check. But if I buy it from a guy out of his backpack, I don't. Where's the burden?
And we should point out that Representative Hamilton is referring to a bill that would do just that. If you have a private transaction, it would have to go through a licensed dealer and therefore would require a federal background check. Is that
correct? Correct. And I want to back up for just a minute and share why I think I'm sitting here today. When I've just been in office for over 2 years. I've been through 2 campaign cycles. And when I first ran, I never would have guessed that this would be why I'm on Indiana Lawmakers today. But when I started knocking on doors, thousands of doors in 2 election cycles and hosting bipartisan constituent forums, I realized it was very clear that my constituents, the vast majority of them, wanted us to take these common sense measures that most people agree on. I can read polls, and when polls of Indiana residents, again, bipartisan, show that 80-90% of Hoosiers want to talk about background, at least have a debate. We can't even have a debate at the State House. So we want to talk about closing the background check loophole. The other bill I filed this year on gun safety is closing the loophole right now that there's an intention in law that if you're a domestic violence convict, that you will not be able to retain your firearm, but there's no mechanism to take that firearm away, and so that would close that loophole as well.
This would be a confiscation process that would be designated.
But, correct.
And you were worried about, you had a news conference this week, in fact, with the Marion County prosecutor, with one of your colleagues from Gary, saying, hey, the bill hearing deadline for committee is coming up on the 19th, I think it is. You're worried that they won't get that kind of
discussion.
Exactly.
Yes, thank you. And really, let's at least start a debate. We have been shut down. The supermajority has shut down any debate on these issues. We can't have a committee hearing. We're certainly not having the debate on the House floor. And that's not good for democracy. Hoosiers want to have this conversation.
And you thought we were going to talk about environment. Well, we'll get you in to talk about green policy at one point, your specialty,
great.
Which you probably thought you'd be on to talk about.
Possibly, yeah.
Are you trying to keep things out of the public
in
terms of the discussion and having a robust committee
Those
hearing?
Laws don't work. And we already have laws on the books that aren't being enforced. Anybody convicted of domestic violence by law cannot have a firearm. So that
nobody
right there,
goes to get it. You're depending on the person that turned it in, right?
So what's the rationale behind that? This law is not working, so let's create another law to be ignored.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Let's fix the law that's not working.
That's all based on a completely naive premise, which is that people who don't abide by the law and people who break the law, people who are not afraid of the death penalty because they're going to commit a murder, will suddenly begin complying with the law if we just pass one more law.
I have a lot of new friends. They're from Noblesville. I didn't know a lot of people from Noblesville. They're worried about their kids. They're worried about people.
This is the shooting that occurred after the session adjourned last year in May.
They're worried about kids having access to guns
because their parents to protect those kids.
What about the people who don't secure the guns from their kids? What do you do about them?
We enforce existing law. Do you know what existing law is?
Yeah, I know what it is, and I don't think it's strong enough. Okay?
It says if you know there's a risk that a child's going to have a gun and use it to commit a crime, the parent who allows that kid to possess a gun goes to jail.
You
That's
just
already
have to
the law.
Lock it up. You don't have to know that the kid is violent.
So without any knowledge of a risk.
You have to secure it.
Without any knowledge of a risk. Okay, I've got a 16-year-old in my house who could outshoot anybody at this table, including me, and I'm a professional instructor. He could teach gun safety to anybody here and the rest of the universe. But because he's in my house and I don't lock my nightstand gun up at night, I should go to jail? That's the proposal. I should
only
go to jail.
If he actually takes the gun and hurts somebody.
But
that's
a law
the proposal.
On the books right now for that.
It's got to be
you
tied to a
You just put in all this jazz about being conscious of it. The parent has got to be responsible to secure that gun, whether he's conscious
of
the kid's
threatening. We have that law on the books already.
If he knows.
There are some Republican-authored bills, or at least one I know of, that would heavily recommend safety. I think that's a Jim Merritt bill, is it not, that would say we can't legislate it, but we're going to really, really
I actually have legislation encourage. That provides a state income tax credit to encourage people to get firearm safety training
or purchase a safety storage device.
People in jail who had absolutely no knowledge of any potential risk simply based on how they stored their guns. That's not why we put people
the
in
risk
jail.
Is obvious.
There's no
Don't
culpability.
You agree that guns can lead to danger? That
guns,
there's a danger.
My children grew up around
guns are used 3 million times a year.
When I was a kid, I was afraid to fight with knives. We didn't even think about fighting with guns.
You can't legislate
There's a danger in these things.
Why
so guns are bad.
Defense.
That's the premise.
No, there are dangers with guns.
John, we have 33,000 people dying annually. This is an epidemic in our country. And my constituents want us to have a debate. And certainly my two proposals won't fix the problem.
Finish
but
that number, though, please.
How much of this?
Of the
33,000 people
two-thirds
injured?
Of those are suicides. Okay, two-thirds of the 33,000 are suicides.
And then take out gang-related shootings.
And then take out gang
Why
and drug-related
Why would we take
related
those
shootings.
Out?
Well, let me ask you this. Clearly, you represent, well, both of you on this side of the table represent portions of Indianapolis, which last year set yet another homicide record, just as it did the year before that, and the year before that, and the year before that. That's sort of a given that apparently the. How much of your advocacy on this issue is motivated by what you see in your community in terms of those numbers? And do you think it could be, and then I'll kind of ask everybody else, you're representing Seymour where there's not a homicide rate like that. If you lived in her city, would you be more inclined
Let me start. So last year, we thought we might be able to propose some amendments to a bill that would have gone in the right direction, I believe. I had an amendment to ban bump stocks, which at that point, after what happened in Las Vegas, there were Republican states passing these bans. The president was supporting
that,
such a ban.
This turns a gun into, not an automatic weapon, but something approximating an automatic
so
weapon.
Unfortunately, my point is we could not have a debate. We were not allowed to debate that. So I asked for a few minutes to speak on the House floor to express my frustration about not having a debate. Afterwards, several of my Republican colleagues came up and thanked me for bringing up that issue, bringing up that point. So this isn't a partisan issue. Those colleagues were from all over the state of Indiana. People care about this everywhere.
Of course, the federal government's going to be dealing with bump stocks, is it not?
That's true.
When you can buy them.
That.
Sales, I guess, are going through the roof,
true.
And then they'll
true.
Be off the table. If you lived in an urban area with a homicide rate, record-setting homicide rate, would you feel the same?
I'm a good person, okay? With a homicide rate like that, why would I want to be defenseless? Why would I not want to be able to defend myself and family?
So you'd see that as an argument to be even more...
Sure, and let's look at the numbers. Our good friend Abdul,
dove
into this and did an Indy by the numbers. 70 to 80% of the victims and the shooters had multiple prior felony convictions.
Yeah.
Okay, those
let's
are people...
Let's protect the cop in
and
that case.
And give me a law that will stop people that don't obey laws.
You protect the cop in that case. We have cops getting shot by assault weapons in this city because you guys won't restrict those. We had a mother give her assault weapon to her kid
Isn't it illegal to shoot a cop? Isn't it illegal to
shoot
a cop?
Sure
it
is, don't we have the death penalty? To prevent some of that. I'm not interested in executing people.
Let's criminalize drugs.
Let's look at some of these bills in general. We've touched on a few of these. We talked about red flagging, which, again, is getting people who are apparently an imminent threat out of circulation, at least temporarily, and away from their guns. Now, it sounds like everybody agrees on that. Okay, so we'll write down one area of agreement.
I testified in favor of an expansion of a red flag law yesterday.
Okay, so there is agreement. Now let's talk about... We've talked about background checks. Clearly, there's huge disagreement there. This side of the table and those on radio, I'm pointing to, just by coincidence, the right side of the table and versus the left side, that's a no-go.
They're useless.
Useless.
Well, even the so-called gun show loophole, we know where criminals get their guns. There have been multiple studies where researchers have actually gone to people in prison on gun crimes and say, where'd you get your gun? They don't get them from gun shows. The bind it out of the backpack, as Ed brought up, is not where criminals get their guns. We know that because we've asked the criminals. Let's focus where we should focus, which is on actually putting criminals in jail, not restricting the rights of law-abiding citizens.
We're talking about young people, and we were just talking about bump stocks and semi-automatic weapons. One piece of legislation that's out there somewhere this session, I don't know if it will go anywhere, but that would say anyone under 21 would not have access to those enhanced weapons. Where do we have? No. I see. I can tell, radio listeners, from the look on Guy Relford's face, that is a no.
At 18, I can go to Afghanistan and defend my country with an M4 or a tank or a bomber jet, but I can't come home and purchase a semi-automatic rifle. That's
so you're probably
silly.
Against lowering the smoking age.
Let's put this in perspective, too, because you know what? We know the individual horrific cases that get publicity, but let's look at the broader picture. 6 times as many people die in this country from getting stabbed as do from all rifles, not so-called assault weapons. Three or four times get killed by fists, hands, and feet.
Let's have that debate on the floor of the House. Why are we having it here?
I would love
We're paid to debate these issues. You're not.
I'm not
we
shy.
Are.
If I was shy of a debate,
why
I
can't we do it?
I wouldn't
it?
Be
why
sitting in this chair if I was shy about a debate.
And you will get some debates. There'll be some amendments you won't like.
I'm sitting in this chair because I'm not afraid of a debate.
All right.
Well, the legislature is, for God's sake.
I think the legislature's focused on where they ought to be focused, which is not punishing law-abiding citizens.
Let's talk about the where, then, these zones, gun-free zones. You know, right now, you can't take a gun, school property, church property. One bill that seems to have traction and is, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, moved out of committee this week, would, in fact, say, hey, if the church is connected to the school, you can go in church. It doesn't bar you, right? Why is that so important to have a gun in church?
Where do 98% of all mass shootings occur?
Gun-free zones.
In gun-free zones. We also know specifically that churches are targets. We learned that in Sutherland Springs, Texas. We learned it in Charleston, South Carolina. We learned it in Wisconsin as well. We know churches are targets. So why would the state want to deprive me of the ability to defend myself and my family in this church just because there's a school on the same grounds when it's perfectly legal to carry in this church over here?
Are you comfortable with it? Okay, let's say they're separated. Clearly, I'm guessing you would say it doesn't matter church, school, carry it if you're a law-abiding citizen. What? So this is basically just a half step.
What interest does the state of Indiana have in telling me, a law-abiding citizen, I can't defend my family in a church? What is the interest
you
of the state of Indiana?
You guys want to surrender. You're telling me those are the danger zones of schools and churches, and you want to surrender the legal authority there. That's a great approach.
No, I want to be able to defend myself and my family.
Jump in here. You got to jump in.
I don't want the state of Indiana telling me I can't defend myself.
Well, I would just say, when it comes to schools, I've heard loud and clear from teachers and parents and a lot of students in my district that they do not want firearms in their schools, except for the safety officers.
Oh, okay. Sworn law enforcement officers.
Correct.
Here's the thing. I have it on my desk at the State House the copy of the report from Parkland. 450 pages. I've read through it. Okay. Horrible. The tragic failures from government from start to finish. I mean, it's just horrible. But one of the recommendations they had in there was arming and training teachers, and that was voted on unanimously. And now, who do we call in the horrible event of a school shooting in a gun-free zone? Who are the first people they call to get there as fast as humanly possible? They call people with guns to get there. Now, our teachers, and I have legislation out here that wants to not arm teachers. I want to quit disarming teachers. But there are teachers out there that want the ability to defend themselves. You look at Sandy Hook. There were 6 female staffers that lost their life because they were made defenseless by the laws that we make. They couldn't defend themselves.
If they had
a gun, it would have been different. They would have been able to defend themselves.
I was talking with some teachers last night.
They were made defenseless by laws. They couldn't carry under threat of criminal
sanction. I was talking with some teachers last night about this issue, and they made it very clear that they don't want to have guns, and they don't want their colleagues to have guns. They do want the school officers, the public safety officers, to be armed. They're very happy with that. But their fellow teachers, to open up those floodgates, you know, things get stolen in schools. Where are these guns going to be maintained?
But let's talk about what the law is today. What's the law today? The law is today that the school board gets to make a decision of whether there's going to be guns in that school or not. So that debate happens within that community, and that school board decides to not have guns in that school. That's what the law currently holds. That's what the law currently says.
Second Amendment allows such an outrage.
We have always respected the rights of property owners.
So if
their own
private policy. Business owner says, I don't want them in my...
Even the church bill that just passed out of committee.
Gives them the right.
Written by very much a pro-Second Amendment advocate, Ben Smaltz, says specifically a church gets to set its own policy. Yes. Nobody's trying to override that. We respect property rights as much as we respect constitutional rights.
One more general church shopping. It's over for you, man. It's a whole new set of rules.
One more general category: civil liability. That's also legislation that that appears to be moving. Basically, this would grant immunity to individuals who use their firearms in that's sort of your legal practice. We talked about at the introduction
I have a case right now. The notion of Sandy Phillips. It was a traffic stop unfolding in her front yard. She saw a criminal high on 2 different illegal drugs attacking a police officer, seized control of the officer's gun, was moments away from killing that officer, and Ms. Phillips stepped in heroically and saved the life of that officer. And in return, she got sued for it.
Right,
she got sued by the family of the criminal.
I'm just trying to look for consistency, which is always dangerous when you talk about public policy. I heard, again, this side of the table talk about if you're a law-abiding citizen, you shouldn't have any restrictions, but if you screw up, if you're stupid, that's when we throw the book at you. Shouldn't there then be the opportunity to sue somebody who screws up?
There still is under that legislation.
Under the bill that passed out of committee that I've been working with Representative Lucas on, is if you're justified in the lawful use of force in self-defense, does the immunity even apply? If you weren't justified, if you used excessive force,
or
there wasn't a sufficient threat against you to justify the use of deadly force in response, or any force in response, then you can still be sued. It's only when the law says that you were justified in defending yourself against a criminal, we're not going to let the criminal sue their
victim. I've got to defend myself against the clock because I'm getting a signal that...
We'll debate that one today.
You literally will. I'll part with this. We saw a rally this week, 200 people showing up, lots of groups on both sides. Did that make a difference, or am I seeing that everybody's already, baked into the process?
The debate has changed.
You really think it has?
There's more role for parents. Yeah, parents are in there. People are concerned about school. It's a different crowd in the hall, and I think that's good.
I was at the March for Our Lives last spring. That was an incredibly powerful gathering, and I think that voice, the public engagement, is continuing to increase.
All right. Well, if it's today's any indication, there is certainly a lot of voice to hear and a lot of opinion to be heard, and I appreciate all of you for coming and sharing yours. Very good discussion. Again, my guests have been Democratic Representative Ed Delaney of Indianapolis, Republican Representative Jim Lucas of Seymour, Democratic Representative Kerry Hamilton of Indianapolis, and Indianapolis lawyer and gun rights advocate Guy Relford. Will Gary's Casino move inland? Will Terre Haute get a casino? Will Indiana legalize sports gambling? All bets are off on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, a division of Hanna News Service. Ed, we talked about a lot of different types of pieces of legislation pertaining to different aspects of a very complicated issue. Where does this all end up this session?
Well, that's part of the problem, John. You've got so many different, diverse kinds of bills on this topic that you can't just kind of combine them in one package, and you can't find, you know, one side fits all for one size fits all. It's going to be difficult to have these things considered as anything other than individual bills, and that's where it gets tricky because you get the individuals coming in with different kinds of debate, different sides of the debate on these issues, and you can't find consensus.
How accurate do you think that Kerry Hamilton is in suggesting or expressing fear that she won't have a hearing before committees are done for the session? Is that a legitimate concern?
Well, that there are all an awful lot of gun bills out there already, and it may be the leadership thinks that everything that's out there that should be out there is already out there. There's an opportunity to amend some of those bills when they're on the floor, so she may still have an ability to affect the process.
Now, this doesn't necessarily break down Republican. It's not a clean break in terms of party affiliation.
No, and it's not rural or urban either.
What is? I mean, is there? Can you define what makes a supporter or an opponent of these measures?
It's really a philosophical issue, and there's a problem in trying to apply some of this philosophy to practical problems.
The governor, of course, how eager is he to? This isn't part of his agenda. Not one of the pillars. To keep this off the stage.
He'd rather not have anything disruptive, you know, on the legislative agenda this time around, because he thinks that we ought to be concentrating on his specific pillars of next level Indiana.
And guns would have a way of distracting, I suppose. Ed, thank you as always. Appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and my colleague Ed Feigenbaum, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House coverage. Until next week, take care.
Purdue researcher Phil Owens is creating new ways to map soil functions, improve plant growth, and increase crop yields, leading through innovation and job creation. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.